Let's go ahead and go over the quiz answers first. So I will be giving these quizzes back on Monday. This is part of the reason for the delay. I wanted you to have those back before you have your next hurdle that you have to jump over. So let's do the mechanism problems first. Problem one was the one that might have looked the scariest, since you had four different reagents that you were supposed to react with the starting material. We did start with a chiral alcohol that reacts first with PBr3, followed by the sulfur analog of sodium hydroxide, followed by sodium hydride, and finally, bromomethane. So PBr3, that is one of the reagents we learned for converting an alcohol into a leaving group. As the directions indicated, the first time you write one of the reagents down, you're supposed to write its full structure. In this case, the phosphorus is very delta positive, so the alcohol attacks the phosphorus, and at the same time, bromide gets kicked off. We have an oxonium ion, which now that I have written the full structure once, I'll go ahead and abbreviate PBr2, make it a little easier to write. Deprotonation occurs. And then the bromide that was kicked off comes back to kick the OPBr2 off. At that point, because it's like an SN2 style attack, we are going to end up with inversion of configuration. So that's what we get after the first reagent. That has a leaving group, and so it's able to react with the next reagent. Remember that sulfur, when compared to oxygen, if you're looking at two equivalent molecules that only differ by the fact that they have sulfur versus oxygen, sulfur is actually the better nucleophile. So this will very easily undergo an SN1 reaction. I'm sorry, SN2 in one step. And that means that you are again going to have inversion of configuration. What's that? I guess it was, wasn't it? Now, what do we have next? Sodium hydride, which, let me rewrite this thiol that I just made. Because just like an alcohol can get deprotonated, thiols can get deprotonated. That was part of the reason I gave the hint or the reminder that sulfur is in the same column as oxygen on the periodic table. So hydride pulls a hydrogen off. We make the sulfur equivalent of an alkoxide, which is not as basic, which in turn, in fact, means the thiol is easier to deprotonate than an alcohol. This compound ends up not as basic as an alkoxide. But again, much more nucleophilic than the equivalent oxygen compound. So very easily we'll participate in an SN2 reaction, which, since we have methyl bromide around, that's one of the best possible substrates to do an SN2 reaction. And so that will get attacked by the sulfur. And then here is our final product. Questions on that first mechanism, other than why did I not get that answer? Because I see some people in the audience going, "Argh!" But that's why it's a quiz worth just a few points instead of the exam. Get a chance to get through it first. Questions? Then the second problem was straight out of lecture. It was an oxidation, which this is going to make some of you moan at this point. Yeah, there you go. Deuterium is not a carbon. This seems to be a common mistake that's popping up. Deuterium is not a carbon. So is that a primary, a secondary, or a tertiary alcohol? It's a secondary alcohol. Part of the reason of saying that is it will oxidize, but, you know, some of you kind of gave me that, well, why won't you tell me? Look, when you asked and I didn't answer, is this under anhydrous conditions? And I said I couldn't comment. The reason I couldn't comment is it didn't matter if it was under anhydrous conditions, because secondary alcohols can't be over-oxidized. So the worst that's going to happen is it's going to oxidize to a ketone. Now, very technically, some of you might have really been paying attention when I said this statement about equilibrium, that if an equilibrium can be established, it will be established. So I'm telling you ahead of time, we're going to make a ketone. Some of you then might realize, well, if you did have aqueous conditions, couldn't that ketone form a hydrate? And yes, technically, reversibly in solution, it would. But as far as an isolatable product, hydrates are not favorable normally. So even if we are in aqueous conditions and even there's acid around, if the expected product is an aldehyde or ketone, leave it as the aldehyde and ketone. Don't continue to take it through to the hydrate. Now, if some of you did form the hydrate, I wouldn't take points off because it is something that happens in solution. But because it's reversible, because it's not favorable, if you then tried to isolate the product, it would revert back to the aldehyde, or in this case, the ketone. So let's see the mechanism for this. Again, the problem directions indicated you needed to put the full structure of the reagent the first time through. So you were given the abbreviation PCC, which you did need to know was pyridinium chlorochromate. Now that I've written the structure this first time, I'm going to just abbreviate using PYR, P-Y-R. Yes?
What was the R-O-3?
But that's not the reagent that was listed in the quiz. So you needed to use the PCC. If you use CRO3, you'll probably get just a point or two off, but that wasn't the reagent statement. It is, but that's not what was listed. You would have been perfectly able to use CRO3 if you were allowed to choose your own reagent. Yes. And whether I do it today or whether I do it on Monday, I will show you the version of how to write a mechanism using CRO3, because it's not very different than this. No, no. PCC works here.
Okay.
What he did is he switched reagents, even though I had stated which one to use. So if you get the option of which reagent, PCC would work. But yes, I had said in class that for a secondary alcohol, it makes more sense to use CRO3. Because I hadn't explicitly shown you the mechanism, though, that's why I used PCC in this problem. Now, the first step, I'm going to do just the same way I did with chromium. And there is still this question of which mechanism is correct. And so if you show the chromium and oxygen double bond getting attacked and collapsing at the same time, that would be counted as correct. If you do it the way I'm about to show you and the way that I showed you in lecture on Monday, I guess that was, then it would also be correct. I'll do that second version where I do a step-by-step attack. So we open the chromium-oxygen double bond, but then it reforms. Let's not forget about the pyridinium that's floating around. Positively charged oxygen, which gets deprotonated. Then we have our chromate ester. which you did not have to show this, but since pyridine as a solvent was used, and it's the conjugate base of the pyridinium that's part of PCC, it logically is the species most likely to cause the oxidation at this point. So if you just use B for base as a general term, that would have been perfectly correct. But if you showed pyridine, that also would be correct. It pulls off deuterium, which again is just a form of hydrogen, causing the chromium to be kicked off. That's the oxidation step right there. And you end up with acetone as the product. Questions on that mechanism? What's that? It's the expensive way to make acetone, yes, starting with a deuterated compound. Shall we move to the fill in the blank problems then? And then we'll come back and do nomenclature?
Yeah.
All right. So the first fill in the blank problem was practically straight out of lecture because it dealt with which version of a leaving group should you make out of an alcohol in order to get the stereochemistry of the product that you want. So we started again with a chiral alcohol that reacted with, reacted with something followed by sodium azide in order to make an alkyl azide. Notice that overall, there is one but only one inversion of configuration that occurs. Now, if we had used PBr3 like we did in the first synthesis problem, we would have had double inversion occur because we would have had inversion with the PBr3, and then when sodium azide attacks this primary center, that's an SN2 reaction, and so you'd have another inversion. But in this process, we only have a single inversion overall. So what would have been the best single reagent to put here? Tosyl chloride. Because it does not affect that carbon-oxygen bond. It just affects the oxygen-hydrogen bond, so it preserves the stereochemistry. Now, what if you put tosic acid? Well, the acid is just a source of H+, and so it would not form a tosylate. You absolutely must have the chloride. Now, if you put tosic acid, you'd get some partial credit because you had the right structural idea, but just the wrong functional group. Unfortunately, for this one problem, if you did not use tosyl chloride, there is no partial credit for PBr3 or SOCl2, because although they're leaving groups, the entire point of the problem is what's the stereochemistry here. Now, if you had been allowed to use two reagents where that question mark is, you could have done PBr3 or SOCl2 followed by the Finkelstein reaction using sodium iodide, because that would have been two inversions. Which two inversions, this is one of those cases where two wrongs do make a right. So if you do the double inversion, you get back the original stereochemistry again, like you had used tosyl chloride, and then the single inversion due to the sodium azide would have given you the product that you wanted. But since you only had one blank, the answer was tosyl chloride. Questions on that problem? Then the other one was, oh yes, and I am going to read up over this over the weekend to make sure I'm comfortable with the way that I grade this. Because I know there's all this fuss about primary carbocations. Because we'll talk about how unstable they are, but it is not always impossible for them to form. What would happen if we put this in tosic acid with heat? Well, it's going to be a dehydration reaction, yes. But do you think that keeping the four-membered ring is likely, if there's any way at all, for that ring strain to be relieved? In other words, what I'm getting at is this. Whether you form a carbocation or just somehow that water group gets kicked off, I'll show it as making a carbocation, which, no, you didn't have to show mechanism because this was a fill-in-the-blank problem. But ponder this. If we did end up with that carbocation, wouldn't it be great if the ring could open? In a ring expansion carbocation shift, much like the one that we did as a problem in lecture. Which, if that occurs, we end up with this compound, which, if we do show it, could dehydrate and make cyclopentene. What I need to do over the weekend to be comfortable in my grading is to see how likely this ring expansion is given the unfavorability of the primary carbocation. And if I can find a good source that says that it's not that likely, then I'll accept practically any other dehydration answer that you might have given. But it is going to be dehydration that occurs in this step. So let's go ahead and back up to the nomenclature. Or, you know what, maybe instead of the nomenclature, let's flip over to the synthesis problems, because we do have Monday now, and nomenclature is going to be a more minor concern. So let's start working on synthesis. So one last time, these are problems in which you start out with a particular carbon framework.
And you're allowed to use that source of carbon, but as your only source of carbon, and you can use whatever other reagents that you might want. And this is where your flashcards are going to become useful, and then this is actually where a sort of roadmap might be useful. What my OChem instructor did is to show one day that if you put an alcohol in the middle of a piece of paper, that at the end of Chem 12B, Chem 12C, you can take all the reactions you've learned and a large number of them go through an alcohol as an intermediate. Or another way to say it is you can make the alcohol an intermediate in an awful lot of reactions. And so something that might be useful to organize your studying is to go through your flashcards, think of all the reactions that make an alcohol. Let's just name some, for example. Give me one example of a reaction that makes an alcohol. KSN2 using hydroxide. Another one. Oxymercuration, demercuration of an alkene. Hydration of an alkene or an alkyne. Hydroboration, oxidation, or oxymercuration, demercuration, those different ways of converting an alkene. What about other things you've learned? Making a halohydrin? What's that? Making a geminal diol, making a hydrate? Reduction of aldehydes and ketones? So we have quite a number of reactions, don't we? What about reactions of alcohols?
Is enol considered as alcohol?
Sort of. Yes. But now what about reactions of alcohols?
Oxidation.
So oxidation to make an aldehyde, a ketone, or carboxylic acid? Not reduction. No, alcohols don't get reduced. But conversion into leaving group, dehydration to make an alkene. So we have a number of reactions of alcohols. So you might want to put an alcohol in the middle of a piece of paper and see how many reactions leading from it you can figure out and how many reactions leading to an alcohol you could make. Part of the reason of saying this is these first couple of example problems I gave you are simpler problems in that they're just functional group transformations. And the way it works is kind of like a puzzle piece. We look at the product that we have, an aldehyde. How many ways do you currently know how to make an aldehyde? Just one, right? Oxidizing an alcohol. So if you wanted to, you could work this problem retrosynthetically where you look and say, okay, there's the aldehyde. What could have made an aldehyde? An alcohol. Is there a way you could have taken the starting material to make an alcohol? Yes, an SN2 reaction. So that's why it's useful to know which things can come from alcohols, which things can go to alcohols, because an alcohol is the absolute best intermediate for this example. So,
the answer in this case would just be a two-step synthesis. And this is the way that you would need to write your synthesis answers. You show the reagent, and you show what results from that reagent. You then show the next reagent. And what results from that next reagent. Questions about that first example?
Pyridine is a solvent?
Pyridine is a solvent.
And it's actually like they use dichloromethane?
Dichloromethane also works, yes. Actually, for PCC, as long as you don't show water, I'm going to assume that you know that it's anhydrous, because a chemist that would do this reaction would know that it's anhydrous, so you don't need to specify it. Yeah?
Do you need to use pyridine as the base in the formation of melamine?
That's why it's often done. I mean, technically, the pyridinium, that hydrogen can shuttle back and forth between the oxygen and the nitrogen, so technically it could be the base itself, but that's why often pyridine is added to help be that base. Other questions on the first problem? Then, second problem, another relatively simple functional group transformation, just to get you used to this idea of more than one step. So do you know a reaction that goes directly from a ketone to an alkyl chloride at this point? No. But what compounds do you know that you can make an alkyl chloride from? An alcohol. Do you know a way to convert this ketone into an alcohol? Yes. So again, a demonstration of using an alcohol as an intermediate. For making the alcohol, we could use either lithium aluminum hydride or sodium borohydride. Now, we at some point after the exam, we'll see a more full mechanism for these reducing agents. What I will tell you for the moment is you can't use sodium hydride. Although it is a source of hydride, the reactivity is a bit different. And it's because the boron or the aluminum gets involved in the sodium borohydride, lithium aluminum hydride reductions. So it needs to be sodium borohydride or lithium aluminum hydride. Followed by H+. You do need to show that there's sort of a follow-up set of conditions. Workup, it's often called. After that, we would have an alcohol, which since it's a secondary alcohol, without modification, we can show thionyl chloride doing that transformation.
Can we also use tosyl
chloride? Tosyl chloride will make the tosylate, not the chloride. So again, if you saw something, McMurray, that implied that tosylates make chlorides always, ignore that, because it's then, yes, if you use tosyl chloride followed by sodium chloride, that would have been allowable. Yes? HCl should also have worked. The only problem you might have in real life is whether you'd get dehydration. So you'd have to be a little careful about your conditions. But in theory, it will work. So instead of SOCl2, just HCl. Yes? It is usually, yes. Let's skip to the fourth problem because it kind of incorporates ideas used in these first two problems. And it's the one problem that shows an example of making a larger molecule from a smaller substrate. Now, I initially had written the product that I expected down incorrectly, and I changed it because I was looking at the number of carbons that were in the product, and that's actually where you should start with any synthesis problem, especially when we get later in the quarter and we'll have the ability to make carbon-carbon bonds and break carbon-carbon bonds. So notice that the carbon framework of the starting material can be found in the product. It just happens to be found twice. Notice also that where the functional group is on the starting material, there is functionality in the product at the same relative position. The only thing that's a little odd, possibly, is where did we get this third bit of functionality from? Well, there are two functional groups, three really, that we've learned, that involve two different carbons. An alkene, which that means also alkynes, but epoxides as well. And we haven't learned too many reactions of alkenes that would result in two functional groups at the same time, but we did learn at least one, making a halohydrin. But we've also have used epoxides, and we just saw on Wednesday opening epoxides that would result in a molecule that has two functional groups right next door to each other. In fact, this looks like the type of thing you could get from an epoxide. Because if you open an epoxide with an alcohol or an alkoxide, either cationic or anionic conditions, you're going to get an ether and a hydroxide right next to each other in the product. So I'm going to say then an epoxide is going to be the most likely intermediate in this problem. Well, how do we make an epoxide? What functional group can you make an epoxide from? An alkene. Can we get an alkene directly from an aldehyde? No, but what could we get it from? An alcohol. Again, see the common theme here? Can we make an alcohol from an aldehyde? Yes, we can. So let's start there. So I'll use sodium borohydride this time. To make the alcohol. If we wanted to do a nice clean elimination or dehydration, we could make it a leaving group first. And I'll use tosyl chloride just because. Which then I could do an elimination with. Once I make the alkene, I can then use MCPBA to make the epoxide. Now notice that in a previous step, I already made the alcohol I would want to use, either directly in a cationic ring opening or to make an alkoxide to do an anionic ring opening. Based on the position of the OH group in the product, which form of attack am I going to want to do, anionic or cationic? The base one, the anionic one, because the ether ends up at the less substituted position, which is something that would happen if sterics were controlling it, which is something that happens in the base version of the reaction. So that's really the most difficult part of this synthesis, is recognizing, one, that it's an epoxide, which that's tricky, and we know that because of having two functional groups right next to each other. The other part that's tricky is knowing which of the opening conditions to use. So to get that alkoxide, I'll separately use some of the alcohol from above, which since you already showed how to make it, it's fine for you to use it in this problem. We deprotonate using sodium hydride. We combine the two of these products. So we did divergent synthesis, where we used one reagent in two different ways. And we did convergent synthesis, where we made two things and then later combined them together. At first, we'll get an alkoxide once we initially open up the epoxide ring. And then gentle H plus to get us to the product. Questions about that problem? Yes?
Can we make gentle nitrile first and then make the alkoxide with one of the alcohol groups and then at the same time make the halide as a leaving group on the other side and then just do the reaction to make the ether?
Make the halohydrin, is that what you're saying? If you make a halohydrin, you could do that. You would need two equivalents or an excess of the alkoxide because the alcohol technically could get deprotonated. So actually, there'd be a small problem with that way because you could get a side product. But in theory, it might work. This would be a little cleaner version, though. Now, we're out of time, so we'll do that last problem. When we come back on Monday, we'll also review the nomenclature on Monday. Yes?
There's also other problems with the triple bond.
That's the one. That's what we're going to do on Monday. So we'll come back to that.